This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It's been 20 years since the unrest of 2001 in Cincinnati. Three nights of protests, looting, and violence in Over the Rhine and surrounding communities followed the police killing of black teenager Timothy Thomas on Saturday, April 7. Officer Stephen Roach was charged and acquitted of negligent homicide and obstructing official business. Anger reached a tipping point after the shooting. It would bring about lasting change in Cincinnati.
Yeah, listen, we'd love to, we want to listen to everybody who signed up. We want to have this going, but if we can't control some peace and quiet in this chamber, we're going to recess.
A crowd of 200 packed City Hall. It was April 9th, 2001. Tension was in the air.
I was in the chambers, and there were a handful of officers scattered throughout the crowd.
Cincinnati Police Lieutenant Emmett Gladden was on duty.
There were people standing on tables. They were climbing up in the windowsills in the chambers.
The grieving mother, Angela Leisure, came looking for answers.
This is my other son. I know he has a ticket. Is he gonna die too?
Two nights earlier, Officer Stephen Roach shot and killed Leisure's oldest son, Timothy Thomas, in neighboring Over the Rhine. Thomas had 14 open warrants, all misdemeanor offenses, including seatbelt violations, when he ran from police.
During that foot pursuit, Timothy Thomas was running down an alley off of Republic Street and over the Rhine, and Officer Roach was running in the opposite direction.
Keith Fangman was the Fraternal Order of Police president at the time.
As Timothy Thomas rounded the corner, Officer Roach already had his weapon out, and Officer Roach stated that he believed that Timothy Thomas was reaching for a weapon in his waistband. But as we all came to find out very quickly, there was no weapon.
Roach shot and killed the 19-year-old. New Prospect Baptist Church pastor and Cincinnati Black United Front president Reverend Damon Lynch III says for the community, this caused the pot to boil over.
Again, Timothy Thomas at the time that he was shot and killed was the 15th African-American male who had been killed by police, I believe, since 1995. So all the people they had killed had been African-Americans, no other race of people. And we know that other people run from the police, other people fight the police, but only people being killed were people who looked like me.
But Keith Fangman defends the officer's actions.
12 of those 15 were subjects armed with handguns, which either shot at our officers first or pointed guns at our officers prior to our officers' firing.
The Cincinnati Inquirer reported in 2001, seven individuals were armed with guns, three were armed with other objects, four were unarmed, and one was a 12-year-old boy who dragged an officer with a car. Tom Stryker was chief of police in 2001. He spoke about Officer Roach with NPR in 2015.
We also knew that we had a police officer who was being dishonest because part of it, ironically, was captured on a dash-mounted camera in a police car, and that did not match what the officer had initially told us.
We asked Keith Fangman if Officer Roach was being dishonest. His response was, these investigations take time. But in the case of Timothy Thomas, for the community, time was up.
It's a homicide investigation, which may or may not, depending on the circumstances, result in prosecution of the officer. So that's how the department looked at it. But many in the community, especially in the black community, looked at it as saying, well, they're just trying to cover it up.
City leaders weren't giving the people answers, according to Reverend Lynch.
If you've got no answers at the seat of government, then you take your demands and lay it right at the feet of what we considered at that time the guilty party. And so people went to District 1, had a standoff with the police officers.
The 3 days of protests followed as the nation and the world watched.
People's anger, frustration was taken out on, of course, the buildings, the storefronts, sometimes on people, Determined racial in nature.
So let's do something about this. Man, I'm tired of going to funerals, man.
Stand the corners now.
Fangman was assigned to a 12-man riot squad in Over the Rhine.
The first thing I remember seeing were businesses engulfed in flames.
They broke out the front window at Betty Williams' pony keg.
Well, they broke in. They broke it Monday. I put it back Tuesday. They come back Tuesday night and broke it back out again.
With looting came violence.
And then it wasn't much longer after that that many of the squads began to be fired upon.
Police fired beanbags at the crowds. On April 12th, Mayor Charlie Lucan ordered a dusk-to-dawn curfew.
The message, the single message, the only message that we want to communicate to the citizens of this city is that the violence must stop and the violence will stop.
Within the week, there were 600 arrests, dozens of injuries, and millions of dollars in damage. The events of 2001 and the killings that led up to those 3 days of violence left a deep scar. They also brought about locally created and federally mandated police reforms. Those became known as the Collaborative Agreement. Now, 20 years later, Fangman says he's finally ready to talk about the events.
I just think Cincinnati has an opportunity, and I mean this sincerely, to really set or maybe even continue to set a better example for the rest of the country on how it is possible. It truly is possible to go from the absolute worst police-community relations that anyone could ever conceive 20 years ago to now actually having what I would describe and many others would describe both in the Black community and the police department is a much, much improved relationship. And so I would say that's why I feel it's a good time to start talking about it.
For Reverend Lynch, Cincinnati's unrest marked a turning point.
The civil unrest had an impact. I think it awakened corporate Cincinnati, but it awakened a lot of our white citizenry to some of the real issues and problems. And I think other, substantial changes were made. So as much as I'm an advocate of nonviolent social change, the corporate Cincinnati did not come and become a part of change after the 14th killing, which was Roger Owensby, or the 13th killing being Roger Owensby, or the 14th being Jeffrey Irons, and probably would not have had substantial change after the 15th, Timothy Thomas, had it not been for three nights of civil unrest.
And we want to thank filmmakers April Martin and Paul Hill, WKRC-TV News and NPR, for use of audio in that feature. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We continue now with our week-long focus on the 20th anniversary of the civil unrest in Cincinnati, which followed the shooting death of 19-year-old Timothy Thomas by Cincinnati police. I spoke earlier with Timothy Thomas's brother, Terry Thomas, and Cincinnati Black United Front member and Collaborative Agreement project manager, Iris Rowley. Here is our pre-recorded interview. Joining us now on the phone is Terry Thomas. He is Timothy Thomas's brother. Terry, thank you for being with us today.
No problem. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you. And also joining us via Zoom is Iris Rowley. She is an original member of the Cincinnati Black United Front and a project manager for the collaborative agreement that emerged from the civil unrest that unfolded here back in 2001. Iris, welcome back to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you so very much. Good to be here.
Terry, I would just want to go back and think about what 20 years has meant since your brother's death, and as we mark this 20-year anniversary, what your feelings are.
Yeah, it's unreal that it's been that amount of time, but it makes sense. We had so many changes go on in the past 20 years that, just to think about where we came and how far we still got to go is, it's heavy right now, but like I said, we're still here. We're moving.
How does your family feel right now?
I mean, we're all kind of scattered. We, at this point in time, we're not trying to let that be a bad thing. We're setting up our next celebration pretty much. His birthday is July 25th, so that's what we're looking for, celebrate the life instead of the loss.
But as far as the loss goes, and I know this might be difficult, so feel free to tell me if you don't want to talk about it, but would you share some of the last memories of your brother when you were with him before he died?
Yeah, I mean, mine was, you know, I guess, like, besides him, his girl and his son, at the time I was the, like, last family member with him for real. Earlier that day, just hanging out right in the area where he was spotted by the police officer, but just hanging out, you know. So we had a, you know, just brother moment, you know, just laughing, joking, talking about each other, whatever, not thinking that this would be like the last day. So I remember that vividly, just knowing like, okay, well, this life, you know, that I've lived up until now has been, you know, it's been weird, and I think of how different it could be if he was here. But, you know, I take that as the lesson I needed to learn back then so that I can be where I am now. But, you know, I remember it, but I really only remember just the moments of, yeah, we were just laughing, having a good time being brothers downtown Cincinnati randomly, like, because we're not from here and none of that. So this is just where I like where I was being 20 years later, like, you know, I'm in a whole different space. You know what I'm saying? And so that's why I said we try to think about more of his life than just the 20-year death anniversary.
Most of us, unfortunately, only know about your brother because of the tragedy that took place and then the events that followed. Because of that, would you just talk to us a little bit about what Timothy Thomas was like?
I mean, he was a 19-year-old kid, so imagine 2000, 2001 Cincinnati. You know what I'm saying? It's pretty much cut and dry. Like, he was learning the lay of the land, and Cincinnati wasn't like the best place to be going, or downtown over the Rhine was not the best place to be growing up and becoming an adult. So I would say that's not really the case on what we're talking about. Him being him, you know, what more do you say? He was a young black kid trying to figure out what he was doing. I had one son. He didn't get the chance to be anybody, to say that, the least. Mm-hmm. And I'm somebody now, and, you know, I'm about to be 37, so I get it. He didn't get the chance to become somebody, so there's nothing really to tell on who he was then. He was just a kid.
Talk a little bit about, if you would, where you were when you found out what had happened to your brother.
I was in the house of him. Like, at the time, I was spending the night at my sister's house. And basically, we left each other probably around 7, 8 o'clock that night. I went, you know, he went home, usual, like, but this was, like, middle of the night, you know what I mean? His girl called, and she came to my sister's house with the baby in hand, like, yeah, you know, it's him. Then went to the store, like, he ain't came back yet. You know, first thing, like, oh, yeah, he probably just out hanging out. That's what people do. He's like, nah, it's been, like, too long. Like, he don't usually take that long to go to the store. And, you know, closer and closer we got to that area where she said the police was at, it just seemed more and more like it. You know what I mean? Like, it was going to be a tragic, you know what I mean, situation. But being a kid, I was, like I said, I was only, like, 16 then, so it was weird, but it was one of those things that it ain't real until you see that it's real. It's like now, like, it was still seem like he'd just been on this long vacation because we didn't see him. But there's always somebody that'll say, you know, oh, yeah, I remember your brother. You're like, yeah, that's good. Keep the memory alive.
That's Terry Thomas. He's the brother of Timothy Thomas. We're also joined today by Iris Rowley, an original member of the Cincinnati Black United Front and the project manager for the collaborative agreement that emerged after the civil unrest back in 2001. Iris, we all remember that Timothy Thomas wasn't the only tragedy. He wasn't the only black man killed at the hands of Cincinnati police back then. There were a series of killings. Can you take us back to 2001 and what your feelings were like?
Sure. And thanks for asking, but I need to correct history because I want it to reflect what actually happened. And And the actual facts of the matter, Mr. Thomas just didn't simply die. He was murdered. He was killed at the hands of an interaction with police. And so we need to call it what it is. But you asked what my feelings. Oh, and then the other thing that I need to straighten out is because of the Cincinnati Black United Front took it so extremely personal when young Timothy Thomas was life was snuffed from up under him, because we had actually filed our federal lawsuit against the city, the FOP, and the Cincinnati Police Department in March of 2001. So we thought by going into federal court that it would stop the Cincinnati Police Department from killing Black men. So I just wanted to correct the timeline on what you just said. We filed March 13th, 2001, in an effort to stop the harm, the tragedy, the murder, the dehumanization of Black folks in the city of Cincinnati. And then, unfortunately, we did have Mr. Thomas' death in April. What catapulted the Cincinnati Black United Front to turn its focus, its lens, on Cincinnati police and the city administration and the FOP was the death of two Black men within 24 hours in the year of 2000. And that was Jeffrey Irons. And then within the same 24 hours was Roger Owens B. Jr., who was killed at the hands of the police just two blocks away from where my business sits today. That was the two, we called it the 2 and 24. That is what Black Cincinnati became extremely agitated, traumatized by, and upset, and came to the Black United Front and asked if we would do something. So those two murders were the murders that catapulted us into trying to figure out how to reimagine what public safety looked like and how to, quite frankly, hold police accountable in the city of Cincinnati. Those two murders are the murders that got us to pay attention, because those were the 13th and the 14th within a 6-year span from 1996, I believe, to 2000. And those 13th and 14th murders at the hands of Cincinnati police and others, we were getting the same explanation from the city and its administration and the police and its administration. All things were justified. And so the Black community was sick and tired of it, did not want to hear that again. And so that's why when you see now when something happens, there is a press conference within 24, an immediate press conference, and then another within 24 hours.
Iris, you referenced the 2 in 24 when two Black men were killed by police within a day, and that Timothy Thomas was the 15th Black man killed by police since 1995 here. And so we're talking about barely 6 years. Mm-hmm. What was it about that 15th killing that you think might have motivated the response that we saw in April of that year?
I think that, and that's a great question. I think that because the focus and attention was, the light was being shown, it was just a little light. And then when Mr. Thomas' murder occurred, it became, and we made it extremely public. And then I don't know if you remember, in that time, the internet wasn't such a good friend of the Black communities, and neither were cell phones. You had plans that you couldn't talk before 9 o'clock. So communication, we had to be old school with it. When Timothy's death occurred, I remember I just walked into work and I got in a phone call from the chief of staff of the Black United Front. And as I said earlier, our goal, we believe that once we went into federal court, that anything traumatic and wrong would cease. Well, we were wrong about that, because Timothy happened the very next month. And I remember literally when Ms. Frierson called me and said that someone had been shot and killed at the hands of Cincinnati police. It was devastating, because the Black community had gone through this time and time again with no serious resolutions, no work that would hold police accountable, no explanations as to what happened to their family member and or why, no recommendations on what the police could do differently, none of that. It was just like, forget your family member. They didn't have any value. Their life didn't matter. And we're just going to continue with business of the day. And we were just about the business of not allowing that to happen and to go on. The unfortunate part is that in years to come, who would have thought that we would see what we've seen in the last couple of years, more heinous murders at the hands of police, more young folk being killed at the hands of police, more rights being stripped away of individuals. And we know who the brunt of that always falls upon, extremely more heavy than any other group, and that is the Black community. So we were hoping that in 2001, that at least that if we went into federal court, that our police department would act like they were on the job, act like that our Black lives mattered then, and act like they cared about the people that they were hired to protect and serve. I don't know if I answered your question, Michael, but I wanted to put that out there. There is one thing that we're still working on that we really want to work on, and this is something that the family needs to help us of Timothy Thomas, is that that case was sealed. And I don't know if you know that. It was sealed in court. And so people don't know what actually was said in court by individuals and the city, the police, and their attorneys and the representation of the Thomas family. And people want to study that case in effort to create policies that would hold police accountable and create discipline that would follow those policies. So we still have work to do in the city of Cincinnati. We have tons of work to do here.
You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're joined today by Terry Thomas. He's the brother of Timothy Thomas, a 19-year-old Black man who was killed by police in 2001. And we're also joined by Iris Rowley, an original member of the Cincinnati Black United Front and a project manager of the Collaborative Agreement. Terry, the events that followed your brother's death in Cincinnati, what were your feelings about them at the time?
Yeah, to me, I was looking at it like, you know, at least it was a movement, but then it just started going the wrong way, you know, where people was getting hurt, a lot of innocent people, a lot of businesses and things were getting torn up. And we were trying to make a statement that I think needed to be made to the direct people that were, you know what I mean? It was crazy. So I felt the way, but I can only say that because I'm old enough and I understand a lot more now. Like, you know, Iris was really putting it there. Like, I could say a lot more because the police still ain't got that much better. They've still been, you know, doing things and trying to still keep it under wrap as much as they can, even with all the cameras and things that they're, you know, implementing. But we, you know, then it was just a moment for me. 16 years old, yeah, I was a part of the riots, but I wasn't, you know, because my mom came and got me, and it directly happened to our family. So it was just looking away, and a lot of bad things happening. You hear about how many people going to jail and more people getting killed and more things just going on. It was terrible. But nowadays, like, that's not happening here, but it's still happening in places, because that police thing is still going on and it's still heavy. Like, whether people are getting killed or not, it's still bad policing going on, and I don't know how we're going to stop that part. So that's the problem that needs to be fixed, really. Like,
Iris, regardless of how people remember or experienced what happened in April of 2001, they certainly got attention and led to some changes that you were a part of. And, you know, you had those events. You also had the boycott of Cincinnati. And then your work as part of the team that helped create the Collaborative Agreement. You all compiled testimonies from thousands, about 3,500 Black people who said they were victims of police brutality, profiling, and misconduct. Can you talk about how important that information was in leading to the Collaborative Agreement and sparking some change?
Sure, Michael. And let me say, the Cincinnati Black United Fund and other organizations that either were already in place, grassroots organizations, or who came out after the 2 and 24, or after Mr. Thomas was killed in the city of Cincinnati, our goal was simply to look at the complete comprehensive life of Black people. It was not just one thing. And Terry just alluded to Black life, young Black male life. And there's so many parts and parcels inside of this pot. And it's not just, and I will continue to say this about policing. There are a myriad of things that are wrong for Black people. You pick a system and I can give you data, show you where it's not equal, where there isn't equity, and it's just not just. But yes, we did collect many stories from communities because we had to first figure out the landscape, what was actually happening with Black people and the Cincinnati Police Department. But our attorneys had traced Black people and the police in the city of Cincinnati back to 1967. So we came into federal court with a whole 33 year from 1967 to 2000 of a race riots and 13 ribbon, blue ribbon panels that had been held, 13 sets of broken promises. And remember, nothing had gotten done, just some things to appease, nothing serious of substance that would hold the city accountable, the police accountable, and the FOP. So we surveyed the city in January of 2001 to get a landscape to see what was going on. And it was the first time, Michael, that anyone had ever asked the Black community how it felt about the police department, an entity of the city that comes out of your tax dollars. So that means we pay for it. We are literally paying for a service that was brutalizing us, that was killing us. And it all can be documented. There is no debate about it. The data is clear, even till this day.
Terry, I just want to ask one last thing. And I know there are children in your family. Are there conversations you have with those children about your brother, their uncle?
Yeah. They are, like, my kids are older now, so they understand what it is, and they see what happens to their own dad still to this day with police. You know what I mean? How it goes. So they get it. They understand this is, you know what I mean? It's a scary fight and we don't know where it's going, but you know what I mean? I'm trying to make sure I prepare them for it.
Terry Thomas is the brother of Timothy Thomas, and Iris Rowley is an original member of Cincinnati Black United Front and a project manager at the Collaborative Agreement Refresh effort. Terry, Iris, thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you so very much for having us.
Thank you. No problem.
Up next, Charlie Lucan, who was mayor of Cincinnati during the civil unrest, joins us live. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition on demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. And this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. All this week, our program will focus on the 20th anniversary of the civil unrest that took place in this city following the shooting death of 19-year-old Timothy Thomas by Cincinnati police. Charlie Lucan is a well-known local political leader and former news anchor. He stepped away from the anchor desk at WLWT and ran for mayor. He was elected. And Lucan held the mayor's post during the 2001 unrest. Charlie Lucan joins us now live on the phone. Charlie Lucan, welcome to Cincinnati Edition.
Thank you for having me, Michael, and thank you for devoting the week to a look back and hopefully a look forward, too.
We appreciate that, and certainly that is what we are planning to do, and we'll do a little bit of both of those in our conversation now, but let's start by looking back. In our earlier segment, we did talk about how there was really a series of tragedies involving Black men and Cincinnati police before the one that really set off this civil unrest, the 19-year-old Timothy Thomas's death. Can you let us know when you realized that the death of Timothy Thomas was going to require a different reaction than previous ones?
The tension in the city had really been building for some time before Timothy Thomas's death, and it was palpable in our city, and we had done some things even before his death to try to begin the conversation and to move forward, but clearly it was inadequate and didn't accomplish what we had hoped, and there was great frustration around the death of Mr. Thomas and some events that had happened really going back into the 90s. So there were several of these incidents, and you know, if you were walking around Cincinnati at that time, you couldn't be totally surprised that something was about to explode.
So when it happened and you started to see the protest and the violence in response, share with us your feelings. I mean, you were the city's top political leader at that time.
I suppose that my, you know, your kind of first reaction when you're in the position I was to try to get the violence to stop and to deal with the immediate problems that were happening on the street. As you know, there was a curfew imposed for 3 days after the riots began. And so my initial reaction, rightly or wrongly, was to try to bring order and safety to the streets of Cincinnati, which was not a very easy thing to do. But well, I think working together, we had some positive results.
We're talking with former Cincinnati Mayor Charlie Lucan, who joins us live on the phone as we reflect on the 2001 civil unrest in Cincinnati. Charlie, you invited the Justice Department into town, and we also know that at the same time, the American Civil Liberties Union and the Black United Front had filed a lawsuit. So can you talk a little bit about what you had hoped to accomplish and how it ultimately led to what we now know as the collaborative agreement?
It was clear to me, and I made the statement in the newspaper, which caused a great deal of uproar in certain circles, that I think the exact quote was that too many of these things had happened at the hands of Cincinnati police. And so I asked the U.S. Justice Department to come in and do a review of our practices and procedures in the police department. As you mentioned, at the same time, the city was being sued on a number of cases where there was allegations of police misconduct in U.S. District Court. And those things kind of merged under the umbrella of U.S. District Court. And as we began to negotiate with the plaintiffs a settlement of those lawsuits, it became this much, much bigger thing than just the plaintiffs. It became the context for the collaborative. So several things came together at the same time, and the result was a negotiated settlement in federal court with Judge Susan DeLott that ultimately became the collaborative.
And so Cincinnati has, in some ways, after experiencing these tragedies and some violence in response to it and calls for change, has become a bit of a model for other cities across the country. What are the components of the collaborative agreement that you think stand out the most that other cities, particularly now in response to the Black Lives Matter movement, could look to for perspective?
Oh, Michael, there were a whole bunch of things that were immediate in the collaborative. As you know, we established a citizens complaint authority, which doesn't sound like much today, although I think most cities still don't have them. But we did that, and we engaged in a lot of mental health training. And I would say that, again, this all comes under the umbrella of de-escalation. So when you are running after a 19-year-old unarmed Black man in the city of Cincinnati, you're thinking about ways to defuse the situation without pulling out a gun. And that was, I think that is the theme of what the collaborative is about. It's also, as I'm sure Ms. Rowley, I heard some of her interview described, it's also about engaging communities more frequently, openly, honestly, in conversations about where policing can be better, where it can actually produce positive results for a community, as opposed to just being viewed as some invading, you know, armed force, as it was in our black communities in 2001.
We're talking to Charlie Lucan. He was mayor of Cincinnati during the 2001 civil unrest, served two terms as the city's mayor. You did mention in an article that was published at The Atlantic 5 years ago, they were looking for some perspective as it relates to then Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and some of the troubles he was facing while in office. And so they lent on you for some perspective. And we learned a lot about your feelings and your perspective during the 2001 civil unrest in Cincinnati. One thing you mentioned in that article was, I mean, this was an election year as well, 2001.
Yeah.
And you did run against another well-known local news anchor, Curtis Fuller, at the time. And you characterized that race that it had become a white versus black election. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I say that because if you look at the results, Michael, roughly, and I'm just talking rough numbers here, but I received about 80% of the vote from white Cincinnatians, and Curtis, who's a good man and friend, received about 80% of the vote from the black community. So my conversation with The Atlantic at that time was reflective of the circumstances as they fell out in that election. I personally don't know that that difference was deserved. I think sometimes people just react to this guy's white, he's the incumbent. But I think we had done some things to try to make the city better, and hopefully today in hindsight, all of Cincinnati recognizes we did some good things. We didn't certainly solve all the problems, but I think we've made progress.
We know from last year's unrest in cities all across the country in response to more deaths of black Americans at the hands of their local police departments, that white people are at least attempting to do more reflection. And you do see more white people participating in the protests and the response to these deadly shootings involving police and black citizens. So you go through that election, you are reelected, but you see the racial disparity in each of your vote totals. What was your perspective at that time as a white person leading a city with nearly half a black population? I mean, was this something that was at the front of your mind when you created and worked towards a response?
I try not to think about that a great deal. I think the circumstances were such that at that time, I would argue that the time between 01 and 05 were some of the most important changes in modern history in Cincinnati. You know, not only the collaborative was signed after the election in 2002, and in that room, in City Hall, you had the head of the Black United Front, the Attorney General of the United States of America, the Fraternal Order of Police, and hundreds and hundreds of citizens who came together after a couple of years of really yelling and screaming and hard-fought negotiation and signed that collaborative. In fact, I'm looking at a picture of it I have on my wall in my home right now. So I didn't really think about, you know, I'm a white guy leading a city that is half African-American and pretty much upset with me and the establishment. I more focused on trying to move the city in a positive direction for everybody. So, you know, and you will recall as well that Article 12, which was the LGBTQ anti or charter amendment, we repealed that too in 2003 and 2004. So it was a time when social justice issues kind of across the board were front and center, and they were relatively new, so it was pretty raw. And by that I mean, you mentioned this summer, and this summer I was struck by the diversity of the protest, by the way the protest was handled by the police, by the calmness that seemed to pervade calls for justice. I was struck by all that because I know 20 years ago that could not have happened.
We're talking with Charlie Lucan, former mayor of Cincinnati, as we reflect on 20 years after the 2001 civil unrest in this city. So you mentioned the police handling of the protests and also the way that you got the Fraternal Order of Police to participate in the collaborative agreement. FOPs across the country have faced some scrutiny, particularly as there have been calls for more police reform in jurisdictions across America in the wake of more deadly shootings of African Americans at the hands of police. How were you able to break through to get FOP buy-in as you started to negotiate reforms?
Well, it wasn't easy. I mean, I, if you know Keith Fangman, or if you've had him on your show lately, I mean, I like Keith, but he's no shrinking violet. I mean, he is an ardent representative of the police and the police union. And he's an understatement to say at times he was angry at me and at City Hall for the changes that we were trying to undertake. But the only thing I can tell you is that through just talking and yelling and getting through it, he represents his people, but I think ultimately the Fraternal Order of Police recognized that something had changed, that even their jobs were going to be much more difficult if these changes were not implemented.
These conversations also, I believe, changed the way that the city of Cincinnati looked for police chiefs, right?
It did. We had an initiative on shortly after the unrest, and that allowed the city manager to hire a police chief from outside the ranks of the Cincinnati Police Department. At one time, the way the chief was selected was just the person who, colonels, who got the highest test score, which is crazy. And then it was changed to a rule of three, where the top three colonels from the Cincinnati Police Department, the manager could pick from one of those. And again, that was too limiting, because when you need change, you know, sometimes you have to look outside the department. So we put something on the ballot that the electorate narrowly passed that lets the city manager go outside the city to select a police chief. And I think that model is the only one that makes any sense.
We're talking with Charlie Lucan, former mayor of Cincinnati. What do you see?
By the way,
oh, yeah, go ahead.
By the way, the police chief, Tom Stryker, who again was doing his job, I don't mean to smirk him in any way, but you know, he campaigned aggressively against this change, as did the entire or most of the police department, and occasionally did so in uniform, which we thought was not appropriate. But in any event, it was another hard fought battle in that 4 or 5 year period I was talking about.
As you reflect on 20 years later and you look around Cincinnati, it has changed dramatically in terms of economic development and certainly with police reform. What kind of work do you see the city still needing to do as it relates to relations among different members of the community and perhaps the relationship between the government, including the police, and its community?
First of all, I'm heartened that the collaborative remains kind of a foundation for police community relations. And when I say the collaborative, I don't mean the same one we adopted in 2002. I think it's a living, breathing document. It's been changed. It's been, as I'm sure Ms. Rowley talked about, it's being refreshed. It's constantly undergoing analysis, but it remains the foundation of how the city approaches the relationship between the police and the community. And I would just say what is obvious, and that is that, I mean, if you look at George Floyd and all the things that are happening in our country, that we are a long way. And when I say we, you know, Cincinnati is sometimes held out as a model, but let's don't kid ourselves. Cincinnati has got to be persistent and aggressive and continue to make changes to make more citizens feel that, you know, that there's equity and there's justice and they are welcomed in our city.
Is there anything specifically you would name and where, you know, in some of those areas where some improvements could be made?
Michael, I would say that the next frontier, or the frontier, it's not the next one, it should have been the frontier 100 years ago, but I think the economic, one of the things that came out of 2001 was something called the Minority Business Accelerator. And there is where a lot of Black-owned businesses have been able to participate more fully in the economic largesse of our economy. And if I was going to say what is most seriously lacking in our city, I would suggest that it's economic equity. And I think both Mayor Mallory and Mayor Cranley and the city have tried to move us in that direction, but that's the disparity that I see that is the most acute at this time.
We've got just about a minute left, Mr. Lucan, and there is a mayor's race this year. And I don't know whether you're advising any candidates, but if they sought your guidance on how to approach these issues that are still relevant, equity, inclusion, racial disparities in various sectors of the community, what is your advice to them?
Well, Michael, I would just say, you know, take a look, you know, learn from the past. And I think more needs to be done. But I think there are some reasons to be hopeful in Cincinnati. And I hope the mayors, the candidates, all of whom I know and like, and I hope that they will embrace not only what's happened in the past, but recognize what went wrong in the past. And continue to build on it. So there's no rabbit in the hat in what I just said, but that's kind of how I would approach it.
Charlie Lucan is the former mayor of Cincinnati. Charlie, thank you so much for the time you gave us today. We really appreciate it.
I appreciate being on. Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Our assistant producer is Nick Swartzel. Our technical director is Josh Elstrow. This theme music was composed by Rob Vetters. You can find archives of our program online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.